Welcome, this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Well, the dashboard's a bit changed, and that means I'm totally confused. So welcome, and I'm going to do another topic today, but what I wanted to update everybody on is I may have told you guys I have a website now, www.marcosastrotalk.com, and I was with my partner DP, and we were just figuring out how to get around on that website. So we were having a lot of fun, and that's why I'm a couple minutes late, so I'm sorry about that. But there's a lot of technical issues with these websites, and guess what? They are coming to me in hordes. So maybe the aliens out in outer space have sent me a lot of bugs. So somebody's messing with my website. So anyway, it's a beautiful day. We can see the moon even in the, beautiful days these days. We can see the moon even in the daytime. It's almost a full moon. So we are not in a position to view the moon very much these days. So there's August the 21st. There's a total solar eclipse. I think if you're in Oregon, you can see it better, but I believe we can also see it here in Vancouver. So we'll talk about that as the time rolls near. But today I'm going to talk about one of my favorite things is galaxies and astrophysics. So I love astrophysics. And in particular, we are dealing with how the Hubble Space Telescope can let us see things that otherwise we could not see. But I did a show on it a couple of weeks ago about microlensing, how there is a far-off galaxy without the microlensing effect of a foreground galaxy, and the seeing power of the Hubble, we would not be able to see this galaxy that is very far away and very far back in time. And while I was reading this again at home, it really dawned on me how spectacular this whole process is, because when the Hubble Space Telescope does this project, so it was a galaxy very far away, and the light of this galaxy is magnified as it passes by a big clump or big cluster of galaxies. And because of this magnifying effect, Hubble, with its spectacular lens, is able to image this galaxy. So without Hubble, without the magnifying effect, we would not be able to see this galaxy. But when I took time and at home, I read about the article, not just on the show, when I was at home, I read in depth about a certain aspect of the project, and this is it. If we were 1,500 miles away, so let's say from here to the Mexican border, it's a bit farther. 1,500 miles would reach maybe to Ensenada, Mexico, just past Tijuana. So that's pretty far away. And the magnifying power of the Hubble allows us to see this very faint event, but this is how faint it is. If we were in Ensenada, Mexico, which is a couple hundred miles south of San Diego, it would be like us here trying to see an ant crawl across the face of a 25-cent piece, a quarter. So that's how faint these things are. Another professor, when he was discussing exoplanets, put it in this perspective. Let's say you were in Los Angeles and you were looking at the Empire State Building. The transit of a planet, of an exoplanet, so a transit is when it crosses across the face of the sun. Because it's crossing across the face of a sun or a star, it is dimming the light. And that is this little dip in intensity that is the measurement that scientists make to tell us, yes, there is a transit in progress, which means there is a planet there. And the dimming effect is like being in Los Angeles and watching someone lower or raise the shade of one window. So imagine all the lights inside the Empire State Building were on. It's over 100 stories high, and there's many windows on each floor. Now imagine on one of these little window panes, someone is raising and lowering the shade of the window. So this is dimming the light when it is lowering the shade, and it is brightened again. The intensity of light goes up when the shade is raised. So this is the equivalent to what scientists have to be able to, or that's the tolerance. So that's basically how much the intensity changes. So now when this magnifying, this is for a exoplanet that is transiting another planet. So now when the astronomers or the astronomers are looking at this galaxy that has been magnified by what is called gravitational lensing, its light passes by another massive object, and this mass has the effect of magnifying the light of the background galaxy. So the magnifying, so to pick this up, it would be like us looking down past San Diego into Ensenada, Mexico, watching an ant crawl across a quarter. That's the intensity difference that scientists are working with. So to do these experiments, it boggles the mind sometimes, because you think just to see that much, or that is what they have to work with. It's quite spectacular to think that. I would have thought if something is magnified, it's magnified two or three times, but no, it's magnified a minute percentage. So this is the kind of work that these astronauts do when they look at magnified images or from gravitational lensing. The difference is just a couple of fractions of a percent. So we're going to look into something again with galaxies, and this article is called Hubble Eyes a Powerful Galaxy with a Password Name. So this is on www.nasa.gov and is June 30th, 2017. So I will now read the article. It looks like a nice spiral galaxy. And again, the title of the article is Hubble Eyes a Powerful Galaxy with a Password Name. Here, I'm going to start reading the article. Not all galaxies have the luxury of possessing a simple moniker or quirky nickname. This impressive galaxy image by the Hubble Space Telescope is one of the unlucky ones and goes by a name that looks more like a password for a computer. Here's the name of the galaxy. 2XMM space J143450.5 plus 033843. So that is the name of this galaxy. Such a name may seem like a random jumble of number and letters, but like all galactic epithets, it has a distinct meaning. This galaxy, for example, was detected and observed as part of the second X-ray survey performed by the European Space Agency's XMM Newton Observatory. Its celestial coordinates from the rest of the bulky name, sorry, I'll do that again, not from, form. Its celestial coordinates form the rest of the bulky name following the J, a right ascension value of 14 hours, 34 minutes, 50.5 seconds. This can be likened to a terrestrial longitude. It also has a declination of plus 03D degrees, 38 minutes, 43 seconds. Declination can be likened to a terrestrial latitude. The other fuzzy object in the frame was named in the same way. It is a bright galaxy named 2XMM J14344.3 plus 033749. So that's quite an interesting name. We can say M1, M2, M3, or we can say the Andromeda Galaxy. But to call something 2XMM J14345.5 plus 033843 does seem kind of long now, doesn't it? 2XMM, I got to repeat it again, J143450.5 plus 033843 lies nearly 400 million light years away from Earth. It is a Seyfert galaxy that is dominated by something known as an active galactic nucleus. Its core is thought to contain a supermassive black hole that is emitting huge amounts of radiation, pouring energetic x-rays out into the universe. So that's the end of the article. Now, when you think about this, imagine us living closer to our central black hole. And like this one, it's pouring out tons of, or not tons, because radiation doesn't weigh anything, I think. Photons don't weigh anything. X-rays, so it's pouring out energetic x-rays out into the universe, tons of them. And you're thinking, how can anything survive that? That is the advantage of where we are. We are called in. We are living in what is called a Goldilocks zone. We are in the right area from the center of the center of our galaxy. There's not too many stars around, and we're not close to a black hole, so we're pretty safe. We're also in the Goldilocks zone of our solar system, where the temperature is just right for us. If we were out, let's say Saturn or something, we'd be at minus 230 degrees every day. I don't know how we could live like that. So, looking at this, this is the thoughts that come pouring out of my head, is how lucky we are to be situated in a Goldilocks zone, not anywhere close to a massive black hole like this that is pouring out energetic x-rays. But then again, this picture is from 400 million years ago. The light we're getting now traveled 400 million years to get to us. Maybe things have changed there. So it'd be interesting to go there now and see, but we can't. So anyway, that was our first article. Now we're going to go to another thing. And I'm going to try to stick with the theme of astrophysics, because that's how things are going to be arranged on my website. So as I told you, I have a website. It's under construction. It was under construction. But then what happened now, there's all these bugs. So I'm trying to work out the bugs. And after that, I'm going to launch with my partner, Deepi Lally. She's from the accessibility community. She has a page on our website. And we're going to be bringing you lots and lots of podcasts. So here I found another interesting thing. Let's look at this. NASA completes milestone towards quieter supersonic X-plane. Okay, so what is that all about? That's an airplane. That's a wonderful new... When I opened it, it didn't open, so I'll try it again. So here, U.S. Microgravity Laboratory launches. So let's see if that can open. Okay, this week in NASA history, June 28th. Let's go back in history. So it's June 28th. Oh, the article is dated June 28, 2017, but we're going back to June 25, 1992. This week in 1992, Space Shuttle Columbia and launched from NASA Space Kennedy Center, carrying the first United States microgravity laboratory. The Space Lab Long Module included an extended duration orbiter pallet and consisted of 31 experiments ranging from the manufacture of crystals for possible semiconductor use. So you know what? I thought it was micro lensing, but it's not. So we're going to go to another article now. That is not the article that I wanted to read. So let's go Hubble again. Let's talk about Hubble. Okay, so this is dated July 6, 2017. It's pretty current. And it says, this is the title of the article, Hubble pushed beyond limits to spot clumps of new stars in distant galaxy. When it comes to the distant universe, even the keen vision of NASA's Hubble Space Telescope can only go so far. Teasing out finer details requires clever thinking and a little help from a cosmic alliance with a gravitational lens. So that's what I was looking for. So right now I'm thinking, why not go for a break if this computer will let me do it? And here we go. So somebody is playing a trick on me. They're trying to mix me up, which they've done a good job of. So hopefully I can get an ID on a promo or an ID, and it's not letting me do it. So the pages have been all mixed up. So let's see if I can do something here. Okay, so no, it's not letting me do it. So I'll just continue on with the show today. Okay, by applying a new, so this is the article. It's called Hubble Pushed Beyond Limits to Spot Clumps of New Stars in distant galaxy, and this is dated July 6, 2017. So I'm going to start reading the article. When it comes to the distant universe, even the keen vision of NASA's Hubble Space Telescope can only go so far. Teasing out finer details requires clever thinking and a little help from a cosmic alignment with a gravitational lens. By applying a new computational analysis to a galaxy magnified by a gravitational lens, astronomers have obtained images 10 times sharper than what Hubble could have achieved on its own. It's funny now, I'm going to pause, because what I did when I was reading at home for another gravitational lens experiment, the amount of magnification was very slight. But this gravitational lens, it's magnifying things 10 times sharper than what Hubble could have achieved on its own. So it's different. So I'm going to continue with the article. The results show an edge-on disk galaxy studded with brilliant patches of newly formed stars. So there's a picture, and in the picture it says, in this Hubble photograph of a distant galaxy cluster, a spotty blue arc stands out against the background of red galaxies. That arc is actually three separate images of the same background galaxy. The background galaxy has been gravitationally lensed, its light magnified and distorted by the intervening galaxy cluster. On the right, how the galaxy would look like to Hubble without distortions. Okay, so what happens? It makes it much clearer. And again, what this gravitational lensing is all about. You have a foreground clump of galaxies. They are closer to us. Then there's a background galaxy that's very far away. Now, without the magnification, it would be hard or impossible to see this background galaxy. But what happens is this background galaxy, on its way, it's the light from this background galaxy on its way towards us passes another object which has a heavy mass. This heavy mass, its gravity magnifies the light so we can see it. So this is called gravitational lensing. And so what they're seeing is a background galaxy very far away that is magnified due to the effect of something called gravitational lensing. Okay, now I'm going to quote somebody. It's somebody called Jane Rigby of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. I have to find out who Goddard was. I went through it one time. Goddard was a famous astronomer. So it's quite obvious that a person would have to be famous or a giant in the field in order to have something named for them. So I have to find out who this Goddard is. So now I'm quoting astronomer Jane Rigby of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, end quote. When we saw the reconstructed image, we said, wow, it looks like fireworks are going off everywhere, end quote. The galaxy in question is so far away that we see it as it appeared 11 billion years ago, only 2.7 years after the Big Bang. So this is a galaxy that is very far away from us. So its light has taken 11 billion years to reach it. But again, on its way, it passed by another clump of galaxies, and the mass of this galaxy, or the gravity of this galaxy, magnified the light so we are able to see it. Back to the article. It is one of more than 70 strongly lensed galaxies studied by the Hubble Space Telescope, following up targets selected by the Sloan's Giant Arc Survey, which discovered hundreds of strongly lensed galaxies by searching Sloan Digital Sky Survey imaging data covering 1/4 of the sky. Now there's another image. I'm going to read the caption under the image. And again, this article is on www.nasa.gov. It's dated July 6, 2017. And the title of the article is Hubble Pushed Beyond Limits to Spot Clumps of New Stars in Distant Galaxy. So now I'm going to read the caption. It shows a bunch of galaxies, and the one that we are looking for is magnified. So here goes the caption. The galaxy cluster SDSS J1110 plus 6459 is located about 6 billion light years from Earth and contains hundreds of galaxies. At left, a distinctive blue arc is actually composed of three separate images of a more distant galaxy, background galaxy called SGAS J111020.0 plus 6459.50.8. The background galaxy has been magnified, distorted. The background galaxy has been magnified, distorted and multiply imaged by the gravity of the galaxy cluster in a process known as gravitational lensing. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the article. So there's a beautiful picture here of thousands of galaxies. It's quite amazing. Back to the article. The gravity of a giant cluster of galaxies between the target galaxy and Earth distorts the more distant galaxy's light, stretching it into an arc and also magnifying it almost 30 times. So I'm going to go away from the article. And the article I read at home the other day, it was the amount of magnification was very slight. Now this is magnifying 30 times, so that's a lot. Now back to the article. The team had to develop special computer code to remove the distortions caused by the gravitational lens and reveal the disk galaxy as it would normally appear. The resulting reconstructed image revealed 24 clumps of newborn stars, each spanning about 200 to 300 light years. This contradicted theory, suggesting that star-forming regions in the distant early universe were much larger, 300 light years or more in size. So says doctoral student Tracy Johnson of the University of Michigan, lead author of two of the three of the papers describing the research, and quote, "There are star-forming knots as far down in size as we can see," end quote. So there's another image. This artist's illustration portrays what the gravitational lens galaxy SDSS J1110 plus 6459 might look like up close. A sea of young blue stars is streaked with dark lanes and studded with bright pink patches that mark sites of star formation. The patch's signature glow comes from ionized hydrogen like we see in the Orion Nebula in our own galaxy, end quote. So then we're going to go back to the article. The resulting reconstructed image revealed 24 clumps of newborn stars, each spanning about 200 or 300 light years. Without the magnification boost of the gravitational lens, the disk galaxy would appear perfectly smooth and unremarkable to Hubble. This would give astronomers a very different picture of where stars are forming. So this is interesting because it's challenging some of the theories that astronomers had on star formation. So our theories now, not ours, not mine, but these astronomers who are geniuses are saying their theories suggest that star-forming regions in the distant early universe were something like 3,000 light years or more in size, but these ones are all about 200 to 300 light years in size. Well, back to the article. While Hubble highlighted new stars within the lens galaxy, NASA's James Webb telescope will uncover older, redder stars that formed even in the galaxy's history. It will also peer through any observing dust within the galaxy. So it will not image the things in visible light, probably infrared light. Says Tracy Rigby, and quote, with the Webb telescope, we'll be able to tell you what happened in this galaxy in the past and what we missed with the Hubble because of dust, end quote. These findings appear in a paper published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters and two additional papers published in the Astronomical Journal. Okay, so here it says Hubble Space Telescope is a joint international cooperation between NASA and the European Space Agency. Now I'm going to read another article about Hubble. It's dated June 23rd, 2017, and it says Hubble scopes out a galaxy of stellar birth. I'm going to start reading the article. This image displays a galaxy known as ESO486-21 with several other background galaxies and foreground stars visible in the field as well. ESO486-21 is a spiral galaxy, albeit with a somewhat irregular and ill-defined structure, located some 30 million light years from Earth. Isn't this amazing? We have all these things that are 11 billion, 400 million, 30 million light years from Earth. That's quite amazing, and we can see them. It's quite interesting. The Hubble Space Telescope observed this object while performing a survey called the Legacy Extragalactic UV Survey, or LEGOS, of 50 nearby star-forming galaxies. The LEGOS sample was selected to cover a diverse range of galactic morphologies, star formation rates, galaxy masses, and more. Astronomers use such data to understand how stars form and evolve within clusters, and how these processes affect both their home galaxy and the wider universe. ESO486-21 is an ideal galaxy for inclusion in such a survey because it is known to be in the process of forming new stars, which are created when large clouds of gas and dust, seen here in pink, within the galaxy crumple inwards upon themselves. Okay, so I finished today with Hubble, and what we did today was used Hubble to see things that are 30 million light years, 400 million light years, and 11 billion light years from Earth. Now that's quite amazing. So with the Hubble Space Telescope and the James Webb Space Telescope, it was supposed to launch years ago. It was also supposed to launch last year, and now it's supposed to launch this year, and it's still not up. So hopefully pretty soon it'll be up, and then the James Webb Telescope will be able to reveal details which Hubble will not be able to reveal. So we're going to have more observatories in outer space. So thank you for listening. As I said again, today and the past few days, I've been working on my website with D.P. Lally. And what we're going to do, we're going to bring you a website called www.marcosastrotalk.com. And it'll have podcasts and it'll have pages like, for example, astrophysics and cosmology. The solar system and exoplanets, material science, DP's accessibility page, where she talks about issues that are important in the accessibility community. Now, that will be probably the most important and relevant page on the website. But there also be things like women in science, material science. There's a lot of materials that NASA develops for use in outer space, and later these materials will have uses in our own planet on Earth. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You have listened today to Astro Talk, and I'm not able to work this screen. So anyway, thank you for listening. I hope you have a pleasant weekend, and hopefully by next week, I'll have my page up. So I'm having a bit of problems accessing the Auto DJ here. So I am not sure what's happening. So thank you. I'll try to put on something here, and hopefully it will take up some time. It's not doing it. So there we go. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You've been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.